Welcome back, everyone, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm Tony Black. I'm not your host today, however, because I'm about to hand over to Sarah Blair, Paige Schechter, and Clara Cook to continue the discussion began last week all about Walter Skinner from seasons 1 to 3 of The X-Files, which was just too good to keep into one part, and we split it up into two. So let's get back into the discussion as we enter the second half of season 2.
So we've got Colony and Endgame after this. How do you think that his vulnerability in front of Mulder in that scene plays into the rest of these episodes and the rest of the season? Because he puts himself out there more in these episodes than he has up to this point, really.
I think, and I'm jumping sort of ahead to Anasazi, because I was watching Bill Mulder's last discussion with his son, and he says, the minute you throw in their doctrines become yours, it felt to me, and I never thought of it before, it's like a crossroads that Skinner is at this point, and he seems to be going down the right path, but he's contending with a lot more than Bill Mulder was at that time. He's contending with Fox Mulder. But it really seemed to me like this is the moment where he's going to be called upon to make his decision of, if you stay with these guys, what they do reflects upon you and your whole life. It really struck me this time.
Yeah, I think, I do think in Colony and Endgame, he does kind of cross a line where he starts to become much more part of the team with Scully and Mulder. Like Anasazi is really where, well, afterwards, that's really where he makes the definitive stand, but it's all building up to that, isn't it? Where he's going to basically stand up to Cigarette Smoking Man and he's going to basically declare sort of almost publicly like which side he's on. But it sort of starts a little bit in Colony. I think really early on in Colony, he's quite aggressive with Mulder and he's sort of really yelling at him.
All I have written down for that episode is Papa Skinner is pissed.
Yeah,
like, all the way across
really,
the page.
Really,
yeah.
Barking at him. But
so
I sort
mad.
Of feel that I feel he thinks that's the only way to get through to Mulder in this situation. And mm-hmm. He's obviously being squeezed by his superiors, isn't he, really? So
I don't think that in this case he's wrong. I mean, we're so in Mulder's corner, but an agent is dead and it's not direct, you know, Mulder didn't kill him, but as a result of what Mulder asked him to do, he was killed. And so he's not needlessly trying to rein them in. He has a point and he's right about it. And he's pissed. But I think that's why we take to him, because he's not just going off just to be just for the fact of trying to rein them in, to be someone to rein them in. There's reasoning behind what he's saying and doing.
And in Endgame, he tells Scully, you and I have a greater responsibility. And I feel like he's trying to get her to, because Scully is the one who wants to play by the book. She's the one who was assigned to Mulder to keep an eye on him and to make sure he's doing things the right way. So I think that maybe Skinner feels more of an affinity to her for that regard, because if Mulder or Scully is going to be one to do things by the book, it's going to be Scully. So I think he kind of feels like she's his ally in that. And, you know, at some parts she's just too smitten with Mulder to really grasp what he's trying to tell her. But yeah, I don't know. When Skinner goes and gets in that fight with X, that's the unofficial channels I want to see. I want to see more of that. That's what I want to see in the Skinner spinoff. But and then he comes to Scully's door and he's all bloody and, or is it Mulder's apartment? Is she in Mulder's apartment?
She's in Mulder's apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but she's there and it's just them and he's like all bloody and like, please tell me she doctored him up and took care of him. I mean, he literally shed blood for them. Like, how can they not trust him at this point?
I think, but what I thought was really interesting was that he immediately recognises Mr. X.
Yes.
So the lift door's open and he knows who he is, and Mr. X knows who he is. So they've obviously met some other way. So, and, you know, he's like, did you tell her what she needed to know? And they immediately know what they're both talking about. And you're thinking that if Mr. X was this shadowy informant that only Mulder knows, and Scully now, I suppose, and, you know, that he was in some other part of the government or other part of the syndicate or whatever, and Skinner hadn't met him, then Skinner might, you know, he might get into the lift and be like, are you the informant? What's going on? But he immediately knows by looking at him. So they've obviously met before in some way, or they know of each other. And I thought that was really intriguing. I was like, how does he know? And they also, I mean, they also seem ready to beat each other up, what I was like.
I know, right?
Like, do they have boxing lessons together or something? Like, how do they both, you know? So, yeah, I thought that was really a good scene.
Well, I think it would make it more reasonable if, you know, he knows X right away and X knows him right away. It would be plausible, at the very least, that he would have known Deep Throat and would have known what was going on.
Yeah, I kind of agree that if he doesn't know him personally, he knows him by sight enough to know who that person is.
So then we've got F Emasculata. Why the heck is CSM just coming in to chill out in Skinner's office all the time? I mean, I just need to know. Like, is he, like you said before, Paige, like, he just, does he just come in and listen to him make phone calls all day? Like, why is he literally breathing down his neck all the time? I need to know the answer to that question.
I also wonder if anyone's ever said to Skinner, like, you have, this guy is here to observe, like, you have to have him in your office. Because if no one said that, I mean, Skinner would be like, get the hell out of my office, man. What are you doing here? I don't smoke. No one here smokes. Like, leave. But I think somewhere along the line, somebody must have said, this guy, he has complete authority. He's going to be observing for auditing purposes or something.
Yeah, right.
And Skinner's like, oh, my God, he's still here.
He's still here. How
second,
awkward.
Secondhand smoke. Secondhand smoke causes cancer.
Oh, man. Yeah. And I also kind of find it annoying how Mulder seems to hold Skinner responsible for everything that CSM does. I don't know why I wrote that, but I did.
It's true, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the episode where he says the great line, I stand right on the line you keep crossing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, come on, Mulder. You're a smart guy. You should be able to figure this out. He is on your side.
And Skinner said, he's like, you really have no idea who you're dealing with, do you? And Mulder goes, I thought we were dealing with you. Like, does he really not, is he not aware that Skinner is, I mean, Skinner has flat out said multiple times at this point that he is responsible to other people. Like,
come on, Oxford, get with the program.
Yeah, he's a criminal profiler. You'd think he'd understand human behavior. So when Skinner says something to him, you know, you think he could kind of read the meaning behind it, or Skinner's facial expression or something, but he's completely oblivious, isn't he?
Yeah. And the line where he says, watch your back, this is just the beginning. Yeah. Intense stuff. But I wish Mulder would definitely get with the program a little bit better. But that's for a whole other show, I think. That's for the unofficial channels show that we have been decided to invent for the purposes of this podcast. Alright, so we've got Anasazi. Mulder goes completely nuts. Skinner kicks his butt. But good.
but good.
Yeah. And then we've got Chris Carter in this episode, too. I was kind of wondering, in the scene where he's got the review going on, if Skinner had a little bit of a larger role in the scene, because it feels like it got cut down.
This episode's really interesting because of the fact that it shows that Skinner reacts differently to Mulder in public than he does to Mulder in private, you know, which I guess it gets shows in lots of scenes in the series, but I really loved it because he doesn't like having his authority challenged in front of other people, which I think is kind of reasonable. He's their boss, you know, and he also needs other people at the FBI to take him seriously in order to do his job. And I think also as well, in that fight scene in the corridor, he prevents Mulder from injuring himself sort of by grabbing hold of him. So he's not just preventing Mulder from, like, continuing to hit him, but he's actually preventing Mulder from hitting anyone else or hurting himself. He's like trying to get him to calm down. It's like almost like quite a lot of like sort of like intelligent self-defense. And
yeah,
so you can see that he's used to fighting. He's he knows what he was doing, whereas Mulder's just like wildly swinging at people. we should give Mulder a pass here because he's obviously
drugged
with LSD or something, isn't he? But when I first watched this scene when I was a kid, I was really, really shocked and I was really horrified, because I felt like this was a definitive line that Mulder had crossed. Basically attacking your boss in the hallway at work in public in front of a lot of other people. For one thing, I was like, Mulder's reputation. I was so upset.
your voice was very high back then.
Mulder's reputation. But also I felt like this was really basically the end of his career, you know, because you don't hit your boss, you know, and especially not if you're in law enforcement. You're not supposed to be hitting other people anyway, are you? You're supposed to restrain yourself. You're supposed to be arresting people who hit other people. So
basic job etiquette 101. Do not hit your boss.
Do not hit your boss. So watching it now, like, I guess now I'm watching with hindsight, knowing everything that's going to happen, knowing Mulder's drugs and everything. But when I first watched it as a young teenager, I was like, no, Mulder, don't do that. I was so horrified, and I literally thought he'd lose his job afterwards.
Well, he probably should have. In any other case, he probably would have, or at least gotten suspended severely, or suspension without pay, or something like that. He reprimanded official, you know. But yeah, this is the X-Files, so
it's also not fair that afterwards they call Scully in and they interrogate Scully. I'm like, guys, don't do that, like, because I mean, she's kind of completely and utterly ignorant of it all by that point, isn't she?
Yeah. I mean, like, Anasazi, Blessing Way, they're all kind of the same episode, really. They just one continue after the another. I think it's clear in that scene that he's not happy. And he thinks, like, he says, don't think this hasn't been difficult for everyone. I like the part where he double-checks the door before Scully comes in and they start talking. Like, he knows to make sure that they're alone, because he's about to have real talk with her. Like, I love how aware he is of his surroundings and who's listening and what's going on. He's very self-aware and he's very self-controlled. I think that speaks a lot to his character. He says when Scully is coming into his office, she thinks that she found Mulder's father's killer. And he gives that line about how, I think you overestimate my power in the chain of command or whatever. And he's kind of being a dick to her, but really we find out later that he's just protecting her because Cigarette Smoking Man is in the bathroom listening. And so much of what he does is, you know, keeping them out of the loop to protect them, if that makes sense. To keep them safe. And I think that really kind of comes into play in the third season, because of what he does with the tape and all that kind of stuff. And then you've got the well-manicured man telling Scully that someone is going to come to you at home or in the garage. It will be someone you know. You got that whole spiel. So he freaks her out, and she's already super paranoid, because she thinks Mulder is dead. So it's a big episode. I can kind of see why Mulder and Scully don't trust Skinner at this point, and it's so sad, because he's busy protecting everyone, and he gets no love for it, and I can't imagine what a lonely existence that must be. He's protecting his wife, Sharon, from all of this mess at work. He's protecting Mulder and Scully from the mess that they're finding themselves in. He's so busy protecting everyone else. There's no rest for the weary, I suppose. Poor Skinner. It's really sad that Mulder and Scully doesn't trust him at this point, but I can see why she doesn't. I mean, he comes cruising up the street, and he doesn't have his lights on. He's acting like a total creeper when he comes in, and they go to Mulder's apartment, and she pulls this gun on him, and, you know, I guess to his credit, he does exactly what she says to do.
I guess the problem that I have is I understand why they have to do this repeatedly, the writers.
Yeah.
Because they need to create tension and drama, right? And I think the traditional way that people create drama in television is by creating tension between characters. Whether it's romantic tension, whether it's, you know, adversarial kind of tension. But sometimes they do that to such a point, repeatedly over and over and over again, especially in a long-standing series where you know you're going to have, like, years and years of episodes. Although I suppose I don't know that. But after a while, they sort of run out of ways in which to create tension between characters, and so then characters, like, are sort of adversarial for no reason. And I think at this point in the series, it kind of still makes sense, but it does eventually become a thing where there's only so many times you can see Skinner and Mulder and Scully pull guns on each other without being like, guys, dudes, you know? Like, calm down.
Yeah.
There's no evidence for you to be this paranoid.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I think at this point it kind of does make sense for Scully. But we see something very similar again in season 4, don't we? We see them all doubting each other and putting guns on each other. And so I guess I find it frustrating when I'm rewatching, because I've already seen it a million times later on as well.
And then you've got, it ends with like this big cliffhanger, you know. It's so weird now being able to watch, just binge it all. It all blends together. But we had a whole summer between Anasazi. And then we've got The Blessing Way. It's this intense episode, and it ends on another cliffhanger. You're like, what? I just waited a whole summer for this. And now now we've got Mulder and Scully in this standoff with each other, and Skinner, and guns flying. Everybody's yelling. There's so much yelling. But yeah, so then we move on to Paperclip, and how fast does Skinner draw that gun? Like, he's so smooth with that. Like, oh, man. Intense. I love how CSM has, like, engineered this where they all think that everyone else is against... They each think that the other is against them somehow. I think it's a key moment here because Skinner officially puts his life on the line for Mulder and Scully by keeping the tape for them. That's a big move, I think. It's kind of where he sort of edges off the fence for now.
Do you guys both think this is one of the, like, most defining moments of, like, Skinner's sort of story arc in the whole series, in the sense that this is him actually standing up to CSM and preventing him from having access to it prevents him from destroying evidence. So before, he might have sort of done little things here and there, and he might have helped Mulder and Scully here and there from behind the scenes, but he's actually outright defying cigarette smoking man now, isn't he? He's blackmailing him, basically.
Yeah, I think it's a big moment for his character. It kind of goes back to what he said in One Breath, where he's like, I'm not as brave as you, I'm not willing to do that, but at this point he is that brave, because he knows that this stuff is going on, and he actually sees it, and he sees the injustice of what's happening. And he knows that he has to make a stand, and he's willing to actually do that. So I think it's definitely a huge moment. And he knows that he's not alone in this anymore. He's got Mulder and Scully to help, you know, crack down on this crazy business that's going on with... I mean, they're gathering information and DNA on humans from all across... everywhere. Like, they see these files and they tell him about it. So you know, I think it's a big deal for sure. And he's got, you know, especially at the end of the episode where he really sticks it to CSM. It's like the best line in the whole series, where he tells him to pucker up and kiss my ass. But I think that in doing this and, like, taking that on, because CSM knows that he doesn't actually have the tape, and I think Skinner knows that he knows, but, like, they both know they're bluffing, but it's like, at what point are you willing to take a risk? And CSM is not willing to take that risk, clearly. So then Skinner finally gets the upper hand after all this time in the series of saying, like, I don't, you know, no smoking, and he puts up the sign. He's, like, giving all these, he's establishing all these boundaries. This is, like, where he finally is, like, this is the side that I'm on. This is where it gets clear. And he comes to pay for it later in this season. But it's kind of interesting, I think, that he does this, and then in the next couple of episodes in Nisei and 731, he backs way off. And I'm wondering what happened between those two episodes to get him to cool his jets so much.
The pressures of, once again, a dead body, you know, showing up. There's got to be an accountability where we think of these as more than a body being killed on a television show. I'm not saying, like, this is real a serious, you know, let's pick it or whatever. I'm just saying, in terms of Skinner, the bodies are piling up, and he's doing the paperwork on them. So I understand him being pissed about it. And just because he's on their side doesn't mean that they can get people killed or lead to getting people killed and that kind of stuff. So he's still, you know, trying to remain, to keep a semblance of order.
Yeah, and he is, I suggest you keep your nose clean and return to Washington before somebody else takes another swipe at it. That made me laugh. It's interesting that Skinner is sitting in Mulder's trash apartment. So I'm guessing whoever broke in to his apartment in Nisei was, you know, just broke in and left the door open. You don't think Skinner has his own ways of breaking into Mulder's apartment, I wonder. I didn't pay close enough attention to see if the door was unlocked when Mulder came in, but he does mention, whatever you stepped in is being tracked into my office, and I don't like the smell of it. So that's kind of his warning. And he, yeah, I think it's an interesting swing from his willingness to go state's evidence and testify in front of the whole government for Mulder and Scully in Paperclip. And then now he's, like, warning them again, and he's come back around.
Well, I don't think he's come back around. I think he's just saying, dead body, you know, let's be more careful here.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's, he's on their side, but he's also right. Again, you know, I've been saying it the whole time in this podcast. He's right. He doesn't just go off, you know, he has a point, and it's a point that should be made. They are his subordinates, and they report to him, and dead bodies piling up, not a good thing.
Isn't there the possibility as well in the site of there being a diplomatic incident as well? So it's, he's facing pressure from what I would assume would be the State Department. Is that what you call it in the US? We call it the Foreign Office in the UK.
Yes. No, but yeah, State Department. It's
State Department. So it's more than just the FBI. Now it's like, we don't want to have, like, some sort of diplomatic incident. And Mulder just doesn't seem to even, that's not even on Mulder's radar. Like, he's not even thinking about that at all. So I think that Skinner has to, you're right, Paige. He really has to think about the wider ramifications of Mulder and Scully's actions. And their actions affect him. I mean, that's the way it works in a chain of command, in a hierarchy. You know, is that even if you have nothing to do with what your subordinates are doing, if they do something bad, you know, people are going to blame you. You're the boss. You're supposed to help to direct them.
Right. Yeah, he's trying to avoid an international incident at this point with not just people in Washington, but the entire globe. So I can understand that. I want to just touch quickly on Grotesque, because he, in the scene with Skinner in that episode, he really has a real moment with Scully, and he actually seems very concerned about Mulder and his mental state in that episode. Do you feel like he has kind of, is this like kind of the point where we feel like he is sort of become more to Mulder and Scully than just the boss, or do you think that's part of being a good boss, is caring about your agents like that on a personal level, or
I didn't really get anything off of Grotesque in terms of it being a defining moment. I just think it's been a constant build. You know, he has respect for them. He's understanding what they're going through. And it's just continuing on now until we get to his episode where we really, you know, get the whole picture or as much of the picture as we're going to get in season three.
And we've got in Piper Maru, where he gets, it's kind of a big deal, he gets shot for in this episode because he, it turns out, you know, Scully's, the investigation to Scully's sister's murder has been shelved and made inactive. And he I feel like he really cares and he wants to make her feel better and he wants to find out what happened to her sister because he knows that it could have been her and should have been her. I want to know what happens in between the lines in this episode because it goes from him saying, I'm going to do what I can to find out what happened to your sister, to getting a solid, very intense threat from these men in black in this restaurant. I mean, he handles himself really well, but then, I don't know, maybe if it was me and I got that notice, I would not maybe go back to that restaurant for a while.
True.
I'd kind of stay away. Like, if I knew that these men were following me and I was under scrutiny of this kind, I would maybe just pick a different restaurant to eat at for a while. I mean, obviously, he's not going to back down, which I respect, but he's not going to let them intimidate him, which I really like about his character, but as far as self-preservation goes, I don't know. Just find another Blue Plate special somewhere. But so he doesn't do that. He gets shot. And then because of Scully's sister that he is trying to get taken out here. And then in Apocrypha, he comes out of surgery. And that moment where he, like, squeezes Scully's hand. Oh. Like, where? And I wanted to know why we don't meet Sharon in this episode. Maybe they just didn't know she existed at this point, which is probably likely. Maybe she just got invented
She didn't exist.
Yeah.
Until Avatar.
Or
maybe at that point they're separated. I mean, yeah, she's a strange character, isn't she?
I know, right?
Appears and then disappears.
Oh yeah, so I mean she comes in Avatar, she comes and tells him, like, I was worried about you because he got arrested for murder, but she doesn't come to the hospital to say that she's worried about him because he got shot and almost killed.
She was there during the commercial.
Oh goodness. So I did like where he said that there's, you know, Mulder and Skinner have another basement heart-to-heart. And Mulder says, thank you for, you know, taking one for the team, essentially. Like, literally taking one for the team. And he says, it's no thanks necessary. Just do my job. You know, this is just part of it. He thinks that he's like, doesn't want to be noble about it. He just thinks that, you know, that's part of it. So, he gets beat up again in Pusher.
Yeah, and like, how does he manage to stave off Mr. X, but he can't, like, he can't prevent himself from being beaten up by a small woman in high heels?
he didn't
want to hurt her. Yeah. You know what I love about that is that afterward, he is not only forgiving, he is so polite to her. You know?
Sweet. He knows it's not her fault.
He does. He's no Mel Cooley.
Yeah. So what do you think if, because in this scene, Pusher controlled Holly to attack Skinner, but what do you think, and then later on Mulder and Scully come against each other, he controls Mulder against Scully, what do you think he would have had Skinner do? Like, what do you think Skinner's worst fear would be?
I'm not sure he could push Skinner. Skinner has a strong brain there.
Yeah.
That's why he had to go for Holly. Because, okay, I could do this easy. I'm going to, you know, burn myself to a crisp trying to get this guy.
Exactly. That was my answer too.
I think it's also humiliating, isn't it, to have Holly, you know, who's, it's weird as well. Like, she's a subordinate, isn't she? He's kind of like her. Well, he's definitely more senior to her, and to have her beat him up, it's kind of humiliating for both her and him. She puts it in a really awkward position where she's like, "I beat up my boss," you know, and he was like, "I've been beaten up by one of the secretarial staff," you know. It's just awkward. It's just so. I think that's why Pusher does it, and also as well, obviously, he's the only man nearby, so and Pusher has to exploit her fear of being beaten up because she's mugged. So it makes, I reckon that Pusher would make Skinner, like, I don't know, cry or something. Like, he would make him do something humiliating.
Aww. Yeah, that's he was already humiliated enough. He doesn't even have to do it.
No, it wouldn't be nice, but, you know.
Yeah. So we've got Avatar, big episode, starring Skinner.
Showing some skin.
Oh, yeah. This is like your favorite episode, Sarah, isn't it? I can tell you're like, starring Skinner, just him. Him and nothing else.
and some other people are in it.
Yeah, I guess so.
One of them has red hair.
I only noticed the forearms. So we find out that he's actually married. Surprise. And he's getting a divorce. Double surprise. Double twist. But what do you think is, like, the most, what's the most important part of this episode, do you think? Do you think that it's just the fact that he, because they couldn't kill him in the previous episodes where he got shot, do you think that, you know, they're trying to get rid of him in another way, and then it's just a kind of a reminder to Mulder and Scully that these people are still out there and that they're trying to still destroy the X-Files, or...
Yeah, they, like Mulder says, they wanted him to live and be disgraced rather than be dead and buried, which, you know, live and be disgraced to Skinner is worse than being dead and buried.
Yeah, because he has tried so hard up to now to really go by the book and to keep his reputation intact, despite having to be in charge of these rogue agents. I mean, let's be honest here. But what do you think happened to Sharon Skinner?
I think they got divorced.
Oh, you mean later?
Yeah, like at the end of this episode.
Do you think she died, or you think they got divorced?
Yeah.
You think she died?
I think she died.
But didn't she like wake up at the end of it? Isn't she better at the end of it?
Well, she wakes up and she tells him, you know.
Then the old woman speaks through her.
Yeah, but it's never clear. Like, he just leaves her in the hospital bed. There's a YouTube video of Mitch Pledgy with Dita from his... Mitch's Pledgy's group, and she asked him, like, what happens, and he goes, what happens to Sharon, and he goes, the last time I saw her, she was in a hospital bed, and then I married my secretary. Like, that's literally all we have to go on. So I thought that was pretty funny.
Maybe she does die. I actually thought that at the end of it she was okay, because he puts his ring back on, doesn't it, and it's sort of like he's gonna sort of commit himself again to sort of saving the marriage, but then obviously, as we know, we never see her again, and then obviously many episodes later he's living in this very spot and depressing apartment, so she's gone, right? Definitely either she's dead or divorced.
Yeah, they may have wanted to leave it open to decide later what they were going to do, but I see both those things in the episode. Yeah, she could be dead, or yeah, they actually wound up divorced.
Yeah. Or we were just back together for a while and then decided it wasn't going to work.
She seemed nice, but I wasn't massively emotionally attached to her. So I don't mind if he goes off to find someone else. But I am kind of sad that he doesn't ever find anyone else. I feel that's really sad, because I think Skinner needs more love in his life.
I know. He does.
Yeah. And he kind of deserves it, you know? Like, he's worked really hard.
Yes.
He's earned it.
Well, he says in the episode that, you know, she's the reason that he gets up in the morning and wants to, you know, like, there's so much in the episode that's just heartbreaking. That he talks about how, you know, he couldn't let her know about all the horrible things that he's done through his job, or not done, but he knows about through his job, and she's his safe place, but he can't tell her that, or he can't express that, because if he did, he would be vulnerable, and heaven forbid Walter Skinner ever be vulnerable at any point, or show any kind of serious emotion. I mean,
I think this, well, I remember watching this, you know, back in the day when I was young, and it really made me think about what PSD is like for people who come back from war. I had never thought of it before then, and this is one of the shows that showed me, and that's the power of television to make you see some, you know, you're being entertained by all of this, but in this situation, you're also learning something about humanity.
Yeah, I definitely thought he had some sort of form of PTSD. I guess my question is why is it that there is some talk about Mulder's mental health, sort of, kind of, not really properly, but there's some talk about Mulder's mental health in the entire series. And obviously Scully sees like an FBI therapist, doesn't she? Why is there no talk of anybody sending Skinner to see an FBI therapist?
Yeah. Scully mentions that he has seen a sleep therapist and a psychiatrist both. One and only brief mention of it. Yeah.
That reminds me, why was she able to get that information that is supposed to be private?
The only thing I can explain that with is that she's a doctor. And maybe she has access somehow.
Even then, how many times have we watched episodes where we can't tell you that, you know? Mm-hmm. And she finds out he's having a recurring dream in which he's confronted by an old woman. How does that help national security?
She read the notes, didn't she, in order to find that information out. She must have read his notes.
Yeah.
Which is really dodgy.
It was dodgy.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's and he brings up the Vietnam stuff again, which clearly had an enormous impact on him, which is another thing that I wish we had known more about, and we just need that spinoff. I know I keep saying that over and over again. Maybe Chris Carter will hear this episode. Chris Carter, if you're out there, please give us the Skinner spinoff.
Yeah, just put your tidy whities on a flagpole and we will show up.
Exactly. We are here for that, for sure. In the last couple of episodes that he's in the third season, I mean, we've got Wet Wired, where, you know, Scully gets wet wired and goes off her rocker. Kind of similar to Mulder in when he was being drugged. And Anasazi when he's being drugged, but not totally the same. This was just one. The only thing I have for this episode is that I wish we had gotten more of Skinner's point of view in this episode, because he just kind of shows up and he's like, he lets Mulder know that this is really serious, and, you know, but I want to know what unofficial channels he was looking into to help get her back and that kind of thing. Because I think it could have been really interesting. But, yeah. And the same with Talitha Kumi. How do you say that?
Talitha Kumi.
Yes, that.
I think the important element there is that he, you know, Mulder is again pressing him for Cigarette Smoking Man's name. Skinner says he no longer knows how to contact him, and it's because he's no longer in league with him, and that's a pretty important point to be brought out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, once he was standing over his shoulder telling him things, and he's found out he can't push Skinner this way anymore.
Yeah, Skinner is no longer useful to the syndicate, which is good, but also kind of dangerous, because now, you know, he doesn't have the access to know what they're up to anymore. So, yeah, that's pretty big, really.
Mulder just seems to not really understand that, does he?
No.
Because he's just, like, disappointed, isn't he? Like, what? You can't get his phone number? But the thing is that it's actually a good thing, because, well, you're right. He won't be able to have the inside information. And he won't be able to necessarily foresee any danger happening or coming to Mulder and Scully. But yeah, it is also a good thing as well. It means that Mulder can completely trust him. And Mulder just sort of doesn't seem to realise that at all, which I thought was quite interesting.
Yeah. I think Mulder's clueless in a lot of ways.
Mulder's just a very emotional being, isn't he?
He is.
Like, especially when someone he loves is threatened, you know? So,
yeah.
And actually, in a way, I wonder sometimes if when they're writing scenes between Mulder and Skinner, they were actually sort of exaggerating their characters a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because they wanted Skinner to seem more emotionally restrained so that Mulder seems more, like, kind of crazy and out there and off the handle.
Yeah.
And they wanted, Mulder to seem more emotional so that Skinner can seem more of a cipher.
That's true. And it's simultaneously endearing and infuriating at the same time, I think. I think that about sums it up as far as, like, the seasons and the episodes go. We've got some comments from our X-Files basement group on Facebook. Billy Reed says, I love all things Skinner. He's an amazing man. Even though it wasn't clear whose side he was on to start with, it turned out he seemed to be playing both sides. And I think it was to get information for Mulder and Scully. He seems like he'd do anything for those two, which is true, believe. And then Marlene Stem says, I think Skinner had a clearer character trajectory in seasons 1 through 3, moving from a reprimanding and stern boss whose allegiances were unknown or nebulous to seeing the value of what Mulder and Scully were doing to actually putting himself into the fray to be part of their work. After those early seasons, he seemed to vacillate between a veneer of altruism, worrying about saving himself, patronizing Scully, and having overly masculine exchanges with Mulder. I think the first 3 seasons were where his character was best used in the story. And Kathy Glinsky says, I love his first scene with Mulder when he says they knew he was something special when he was at the Academy and calls him Fox. I do too, Kathy. So,
does he ever call him Fox again?
I don't think so. Not that I know of.
Maybe more the sort of subtly hints, I don't ever want you to ever call me that name ever again. Please.
Maybe that happened in the commercial.
Yeah. Please, sir. I hate my first name.
Yeah. So, I think that pretty much sums up kind of what we talked about, is that on the surface it does seem like he's playing sides, and before we really got a handle on his character. And I think going back the way we're able to do now and watch things again and again from a different point of view each time helps us really kind of understand his character a lot better. It's definitely a lot there and a lot to analyze. So now that we've gone 2 hours on this... I think we've done a pretty good job. What about you?
I think we did good, but we did not point out that it took a really long time for the crew to figure out how to shoot Skinner's glasses without them being in the reflection of the glasses.
Oh, you mean like glare?
Yeah. Glare.
No, like you can see the crew in his glasses in the early episodes, and
can
I'm
you?
So...
Oh my God.
I'm so fixated on that I'm almost missing what he's saying, because I'm like, oh, who's that? Oh, is that Braidwood?
Oh, I honestly have never noticed that. I'm too busy looking at his big, beautiful bald head.
Well, just watch Tombs one more time and watch that episode, and it's so, like, you can't listen to anything else. You just...
All right, guys, that's your assignment. Go forth and look for... Tom Braidwood in reflection glasses. On your next Skinner rewatch, pay close attention. Ladies, this has been a blast. I'm so glad I got to do this with you all. Paige, where can we find you online?
Well, as I just mentioned my sister pointing out the glare on the glasses. I do a rewatch blog with her called Sibling Cinema at Blogger. And then we also have a Twitter account, sibling_cinema. And we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, Pinterest. Find us anywhere and everywhere.
Awesome. Clara, how about you?
So you can find me on Twitter at ClaraJeanMC. So please feel free to tweet me any sort of thoughts, appreciations, ideas that you have about Skinner. I'm well up for it.
Awesome. And I'm Sarah Blair, SarahBlair on Twitter. And you can find me, I'm always around, in our Facebook group, the X-Files Basement, the X-Cast podcast fan group. And I also have a book out called Darkness Shifting. If you are a Skinner fan, I think you might find it interesting. There happens to be a retired FBI agent who's bald and wears glasses and enjoys rolling up his sleeves. His name is Mitch in my book. So thank you so much for joining us on this episode where we discuss all things Skinner, and we're definitely going to be back with more at some point. And until then, trust no one.
The X-Cast and X-Files podcast is produced and presented by Tony Black, alongside a dedicated group of podcasters and X-Files fans. You can find us on Twitter at The X-Cast, and on Facebook if you type in The X-Cast, or at our group, X-Files Basement, an X-Cast podcast fan group, where you can continue the discussion about all things Mulder and Scully. If you want to support The X-Cast further, you can now subscribe and become a patron of the show on Patreon. On Google, just type patreon.com/TheXcast. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. You'll see all of our tiers, subscription options and perks, which include early access to episodes, bonus content such as commentaries on X-Files episodes, access to a patron chat zone, and even appearing on one of our patron roundtable discussions. We would appreciate any support you can give the show, so just go to patreon.com/TheXcast to find out more. Our title music is provided courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at IAmWillAYE.